And would someone like to move the approval of the minutes from last month, please?
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Question? All in favor? Aye. Do we have to do a roll call, Carolyn?
Yes, we do.
All right, let's vote. It's been moved and seconded that the meeting minutes from last month be approved. We need a roll call vote. Okay. Mayor Elliker.
Yes.
Mario.
Yes.
Who else is on? Who else is on? I can't see everyone on my screen.
Tom, I think Tom Kama is on.
Tom? Tom, are you there?
So then you don't have a
camera. Show up on the camera online.
I'm looking.
I don't, Tom?
We don't have quorum without him.
Yeah.
Tom Kim is here.
Tom, we're voting the meeting minutes. How do you vote?
Approve.
Okay. Anyone else? The minutes from last month carries. Okay, we'll hold off on the investment report. Carolyn, will you give us an update on the IRS disability benefits ruling?
We were told by the IRS we were going to get a decision last week, but we have not received.
So it's on hold.
Yeah. Well, it will probably come right today after the meeting, but you know, we were told they were going to fax us the decision, but we have not received it.
Okay.
So we'll report next month.
Okay. Do you have an update for us for Brenna Salzman? Oh, I'm sorry. I wouldn't be talking to you. I'm sorry. We can go into Yale Occupational. Dr. Redlich.
Before Dr. Redlich presents, this is Carolyn. Maybe Leanna could give some background about what's been going on, and then we could turn it over to Dr. Redlich.
This is Leanna. Yale Occupational, we send them to do for SERF mainly re-exams, but then also if a SERF employee is trying to retire on a disability, they have to also go see Yale Occupational. Unfortunately, with the crisis, I'm sure, of going on with COVID, it's really delayed in getting these reports. We have one employee specifically who cannot retire unless he's approved for disability because of his years of service. And I was told he was seen in January, and we just have not gotten this report yet. And there's just been numerous occasions of reaching out, asking where these reports are. I have the employees themselves asking about, you know, where these reports are. And, we're just at a loss as to what's taking so long to get them to us.
And before Dr. Redlich, this is Carolyn. I did write to Dr. Redlich. I told her that we have a written contract with Yale Occupational. Those reports are due within 2 weeks of the time that the physician has seen the member, the SERF member. And it's been months. And this is not just a SERF problem, it's really as well, which is not your concern, a PNF problem, but because it is a pattern, I think in PNF there are like 10 people who were seen between January and March, and we don't have those reports. So I wrote to Dr. Redlich. I asked her to be here today because I think the board needs to decide, you know, since there is this is a very serious breach of the contract, what they want to do.
Hello.
Jerry?
Can you clarify?
Yes, I apologize. I have some technical
Okay, Jerry, Dr. Redlich is going to respond to the issue with the delay in the reports. Dr. Redlich.
Okay.
I take responsibility for this, and there's just been multiple issues. I think we worked over the weekend to get a system in place. I think that you should have gotten about 9 or 10 reports last night?
I have not gotten any yet.
Okay, because they were, with the changeover with the COVID and going from, and I know some of these predate that, but I went through our system, an electronic system, and there were at least about 10 letters that are all completed that I will see what is going on. And I won't go into the various issues. I think at this point, we do have, I think in terms of, we really should get the reports done in 2 weeks. We, you know, the issues that we've had with records, I think we are, have straightened that out mostly. I have the list of the 11 old ones, and there are about 3 or 4 on that list that have not made an appointment. So there are two categories. There's some that we had seen and our report was delinquent, and I think we have a system in place that won't happen, you know, will not happen. There's also another group that has not made an appointment. We are doing Zoom visits, which does create much more flexibility because we can schedule people at different times.
Excuse me, would everyone mute your phone, please?
And I went through our list last night, and there were definitely some late from January and February, and I believe those are all sent, and we have had, with the COVID change, some troubles getting people in for Zoom visits, but I think we have that a system in better place now. I'm also wondering, when you email us that you know someone has applied and that they will be calling us, can we at that point go ahead and contact them, or should we wait for them to contact us?
This is Leanna. We send, when we contact, every time somebody either needs a re-exam or their initial exam, we send a letter both to, you know, your office at Yale Occupational, and we also send a letter to the employee giving them your phone number to get in contact with you. So they should be getting in contact with you, but that's not a problem if they don't, for your office to contact them as well.
Because I have a list of at least 10 people that you've emailed us about that have not contacted us.
Mm-hmm.
We've been pretty good about calling people right back if someone isn't picking up. But the second we get that email from you, can we just go ahead and reach out to them?
Yeah, I don't see a problem with that.
Okay. I think that would work better.
If you get the telephone numbers of the people.
Yeah, so I think currently
it should be on, I believe, the application that we send to you.
Okay, so why don't I was one of the main question I had. I think we will do that, and I think that will expedite the process.
How about sending the email of the people also, so they can another way to get them rather than just phone.
Because we're having a lot of trouble contacting some people.
Yeah, I think the issue at hand here isn't so much of new ones. The issue is at hand is of ones that we're just really delinquent on. Because,
so I think we caught both over the weekend, but I have a list of like 10 people here, and I, you know, we could go over those 10, but I'm pretty sure that now they should be, when we send them, they're supposed to be faxed over to you.
I had originally asked, because we're not in the office fully, to have them email to me. So Barb was supposed to be emailing to me.
Could I ask a question? Elker,
Mario, then Mario.
I have a couple of questions. So I'm not sure if it's the committee's or the pension board's role to kind of troubleshoot email in those sort of details. That's the staff and the consultant's role. How long have we been working with Yale Occupational? These are questions not for Attorney Cohn and Leanna.
Right. I believe Yale is Jerry on the phone? I believe he's working.
Is it like months or years?
Years.
And has years. These problems existed before recently?
No, and I'm that's
not I not to disagree.
This is a Jerry should answer this question.
Yeah. Not to disagree from what I'm understanding, that the amount of time, the lapses, it's always been somewhat of a problem, but this is an acute situation right now with the number of people involved, especially one on the SERF side who it's not too much of a consequence on the police and fire side because these people are basically already retired and getting the benefit. The only thing is that if they get the disability benefit, they get the favorable tax treatment. But we do have a SERF employee who's been trying to retire for about 7 months now, and 6 months now, and that individual has no other source of retirement other than a service neck disability. And he went for the examination, and we still don't know. He doesn't know whether he can retire or not because we haven't received any medicals on him.
Okay, I think.
A couple of other questions. So the city has made, the pension fund has made multiple attempts to try to correct this and complain, and it hasn't been resolved. Is that correct?
I've had emails since January, February, March, April, May, going back and forth, trying to ask where all these reports are.
And your recommendation is we terminate the contract. Is that correct?
No, that's not my recommendation. I was at a loss of, I don't know what else to do because I'm getting emails from Kermer. I'm getting emails from the employees. I'm getting emails from the retirees. Now, when we get them, I'm going to have an influx of 20 to 25 of these reports, which there's lots of labor that goes into what we have to do once, you know, to get them on the agendas. Then once they're approved, to switch them over to disability. Whereas if we are getting them in a timely fashion, it won't be this huge influx of them.
What are the other organizations that do this?
Well, Mira, to be very honest with you, the last time that we issued an RFP for a medical consultant, it was pretty much sole source because Yale Occupational was the only respondent to the RFP. And that was a pretty widely circulated RFP. So there were not candidates that responded to it other than Yale Occupational. But, you know, I agree with the mayor. I think that, you know, there's some micromanaging going on here. I think that we put it on the agenda to let the trustees know that there's a problem and that it's affecting the ability of employees to retire or to change their retirement type from an age annuity to a service-connected disability. I think we've vocalized that. I think Yale Occupational knows that there is a problem, and I think that this can be handled administratively from this point on, and making sure that Yale Occupational responds in a very timely manner, and we will have to get back to the trustees the next meeting and let them know if it appears that the problem is dissipating.
So
maybe the response, and then I can turn over to other folks, but maybe the response is that, to your point, we leave this item on the agenda for the next meeting and see if there's an improvement in the response.
Yes, because I don't think anybody's recommending termination of the contract at this point, but that may very well happen depending on their ability to, you know, to perform the scope and services of that contract. But I think they know that there's a serious problem here that has to be addressed. I believe you know that, right, Dr. Redlich?
Yes, and you know, I think maybe if we did take this offline, because I think one of your comments identified where one of the problems may be. So Leanne, if I could talk to you later, because I will start printing out the reports that I thought you had.
Okay.
I would appreciate next month, because I'd like to fix this. And then we could have an update next month.
Sounds good.
Okay.
That sounds right. Yep.
So we'll review this next month.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Justin Oliver again. It sounds like if the city's made multiple attempts to reach out and you've just identified a small problem, then, you know, the contractor should have reached out or responded to the city and troubleshooted this issue if it was that easy to resolve it. It's important, obviously, to you know, we have a responsibility to the people that we're sending you to, or sending to you, and it's important that you're very responsive to the city if there's some problem and troubleshoot these issues before it gets to this point.
I agree.
Thank you.
So this is Carolyn. I would feel better if we could actually have a commitment that these, I count 15 reports, the date by which Leanna will receive those 15 reports.
I think most of them she'll receive today, because I think they're completed, but there's been a transmission problem.
So to Attorney Cohn's point, it sounds like most will be received today. When will all be completed by?
Well, I think Leanne and I think all the ones that we have seen should be completed this week. I think some of them on the list have not made an appointment with us. And I'd like to just go over that with her.
Okay. But everybody that you've seen will receive this week.
That's
Carolyn.
That's what I think.
So we should have resolution by Friday.
I actually came into the clinic because I was going to print them out myself, and then I will scan and email them to you.
Okay. Yeah, because I know most of them were seen in January and February, so that's why I'm just like, I don't know what's taking 3 months to get them if they were seen.
Letters in front of me in this computer system, so I am in the office now, and I will print them and scan and email them to you.
Okay.
And then offline, you and I could then go, I think there are a couple that are on the list that did not make an appointment, but I'd like to just clarify that with you.
So we should have a resolution by Friday. And you'll contact us, Leanna, if there are any issues.
Sure. Yep, okay. Definitely.
All right. Thank you. Jerry, you want to take over?
Yeah, okay. You did very well. I apologize for the technical problem. My password wasn't working, but Mira, the one you gave me worked when I tried it. So there was some kind of technical problem. But again, I apologize. And Kathy, thank you for ushering the meeting in. I think we're on administrative matters. And hi, did we do a yet update on IRS disability benefit?
Brenner Salzman contract.
All right, well, we're on the Brenner Salzman C.
Yes.
Okay, at the last meeting, the contract for Brenner Saltzman as legal counsel for the SERF plan was discussed because the contract had been forwarded to the Office of Corporation Counsel for the city, who in turn indicated that they could not review the contract with Brenner Saltzman because the pension board was a separate entity. That being the case, the trustees, based on vote at the last meeting, indicated that they would like to have outside legal counsel review the contract, even though it's not a long document. And they had asked me to try to reach out to some law firms so they could have a competitive process to review prices to determine if they would be willing to review the contract and report back to the trustees. I did that. First of all, with the coronavirus situation, many law firms, for some reason, weren't even answering their phones, so it was difficult to get some of them. The ones that I got, some of them indicated that they weren't really interested in it because it wasn't a big ticket item for them. But the ones that were interested, we have two respondents that came back. One was Barclay and Damon, which is on Long Wharf, and the other one is Keyes and Murphy. And Barclay Damon gave us a flat rate price of $1,500 to review the contract. And Keyes and Murphy said that they would do the contract review for $450. So at the last meeting, I was asked to report back to the trustees as to any prices that I had to. I had a solicitor from law firms. That's what I got back. Several more said they were going to respond, but I've not heard from them. I guess it's up to the trustees to determine at this point if they want to incur the cost of one of these two firms to have them conduct a formal review of the contract. Both firms have the contract, so they know what's entailed in terms of what has to be done. So I think these prices are pretty firm. And I know at the last meeting also it was a close vote because some of the trustees thought that the contract review by outside counsel wasn't necessary because the contract was pretty much paper cutter. I don't know if the trustees want to do this point. If you want to go ahead and forward the contract to one of these firms based on the prices that I have. Because I think we should get this contract wrapped up one way or another. It's been hanging for a while.
So I would move that we go with the $450 review.
It's all right, motion's been made.
Challenging contract, but I think just having independent eyes on it is prudent on our part.
Yep. Okay, well, that's Trustee Graves has made a motion to go with Keyes and Murphy for a charge of $450 to review the contract and report back to the trustees. Is there a second to that motion? Is there a second to the motion?
This is Tom Kimmel. I have a discussion.
So I'll second the motion to allow discussion.
You got to second the motion first before you discuss it.
Yeah, I know that, but nobody was seconding it.
So. This is Justin Ellicrom seconding the motion.
All right, motion's been seconded. All right, is there a discussion on the motion?
Yeah, my only question is to Carol Cohen. Does her firm have a relationship with the firm we're potentially going to hire?
So who are the individuals? Because the name of this firm does not sound familiar. And where are they located, Jerry? This is Carol.
Keyes and Murphy. They do much work with the Dow firm in New Haven.
So is that Jack Keyes?
That's correct.
You probably don't know him, Carolyn, do you?
He was our former probate judge, yeah.
Yeah, I removed
he's a friend.
I removed the discussion. I'm going as Judge Keyes. I'm fine.
And who's Murphy?
No disrespect intended, but do you really want to ask Jack to give an opinion on your contract?
Do I want to? This isn't my decision.
I know. It's just, why not just approve it? Because it's...
Who's Murphy?
$150.
It's Attorney Murphy. Jerry, what's the first name for that person?
I'm not sure who's Murphy. Murphy is with... But I know Keyes is working in coordination with the Dow firm in New Haven. Because that's the firm that I contacted, and they had given me Judge Keyes' information to work through him on it. Or his Keyes and Murphy. Barclay and Damon is a firm that's located in the building on Long Wharf.
This is Justin Ellicker. I still think that we should just approve this contract. I've read it both on the PNF side and on the SURF side and think we could save $450. It's not that complicated of a contract. And as I recall, Attorney Cohen, we can cancel the contract with some notice. Is that correct?
Yes. 30 days notice.
30-day notice.
And if you want to cancel before then, that's okay with me too. It's just
the 30 days notice seems like some problem.
So, in lieu of Mayor's comments, and depending that you read it, I'd like to withdraw my motion, and we move forward with the contract for Brenna Salzman. Is that permissible?
Absolutely.
I'm not sure if it is. We'll add a motion, and I'll second it.
Okay.
Well, I think first of all, we had a motion to I believe go with Keyes and Murphy, and then we're saying that that's not going to be a motion at this point. So we have to cancel that motion, and then
that's,
go on
that's,
to your
I believe
motion,
what,
Kathy.
This is Justin Elker. That's I believe what Ms. Graves just did. Is that right?
Yes.
And I second the motion to do that.
Okay.
I think that I can't remember the Roberts rules here, but I may maybe have to withdraw my second. If that's the case, I withdraw my second too. And I don't know if the committee needs to vote on that. We just withdraw.
That's right.
For a second. And then so it sounds like there's an opportunity to make another motion.
So I'm withdrawing my motion.
Yep.
And I move forward with the Brenna Salzman contract.
I'll second that.
Second.
That motion has been made. That motion has been second. All in favor? Is there discussion on that motion? If not, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Do we
have to do it by name. I apologize. The Zoom thing is all right. All those in favor of accepting the contract as it is without legal review, identify yourself.
Mario Zangari, yes.
Okay.
Kathy Graves, yes.
Okay.
Justin Elker, yes.
Tom
Kammer, yes. Jerry Sagnoli, yes.
Okay.
That's it. There's only trustees that are there, right?
That's it.
In attendance at the meeting. All right, so the motion carries, and the contract will be signed by myself as the chairperson, and forward it to back to Brenna Salzman.
I thank you very, very much.
This is Justin Elker. I just want to say thank you to Jerry for putting in the effort to find that extra attorney, even though we didn't move forward with that. I appreciate that effort.
That's okay.
Are there any other questions for Dr. Redlick or Yale Occupational Environmental Medicine?
No, I think we're all set. Thank you so much, Dr. Redlick.
Just one last thing, because can I ask? I noticed that Dr. Redlick in her comments said that there were some people who were supposed to be making appointments that had not followed through. And if there's a way that we can get a list of who those people are,
I was actually just writing an email with them, so I will send those.
Okay, because I think we have to know, in all fairness to Yale Occupational, if people have been notified to go but haven't gone, we have to know that also.
I'll get that.
All right, so you're going to let us know, Dr. Redlick, right?
Yes. Yeah.
All right, thank you. All right, I think we can go on to item number 4, which is information only, age, annuity, retirement, rule of 80, early retirement. Is there any questions on item number 4? Basically pro forma. Item 5, contribution withdrawals, again, information only. If there are any questions on item number 5. Items number 6 and 7, death after retirement, information only. These are people that are actually receiving benefits, retirees. And item 7 is the death of a survivor of a retiree. These are information only. If I can ask the trustees for a observance of a moment of silence for the repose of the souls of these individuals, I would appreciate it. Okay. Item 8, payment of bills.
Can I make a quick comment? This is Justin Elker. I just want to say that when I came to New Haven, it was like 13 years ago, and was thinking about getting involved in politics, Brian McGrath was the first person I met. It's kind of amazing that I'm still involved in politics, because Brian McGrath, as many people know, is a very lively individual that has been involved in many, many ways in politics in New Haven. And,
oh, yes.
Just wanted to
Brian
say,
will.
We're sad to see him go.
Oh.
Yes.
Yes, that was Brian.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm with the payment of bills.
Yeah, item 8.
I move that we pay the bills.
Motion is made by Trustee Graves. Can I have a second, please?
I'll second that motion.
Tom Kam has seconded.
Tom Kam has seconded. Is there discussion on this motion? In the absence of a motion properly made and second, all in favor indicate by saying aye. By name, again, all in favor, please identify yourself.
This is Kathy. I approve.
Mario, I
approve. Tom Kama.
Justin Harper, yes.
Mario?
I did. I said I approved.
Okay, I'm sorry, Mario. Jerry Sagnola, yes. Under item 9, old business, is there any old business which should be brought forward at this point? If not, item 10, any new business to be brought forward at this point? If not, I believe we can go back to item 1, investment report. I'm not sure I want to hear it, but is the Raymond James staff here?
We are here. So
let's get the bad news.
Well, the month of April was good news, so this will be a good news meeting.
Okay.
I believe Leanna sent out to everybody the presentations. If I can indulge you to open up this 2020 April report. If this is your performance report, I will go through this rather quickly for the sake of time. If you want to scroll forward to page 6 of 21 in the PDF, you can see the New Haven SURF composite. Up on top, the fund is roughly worth $168,496,000. The 1 month of April, the fund was up 5.83%. For 3 months, January through through April, the fund was down 5.15%. Year to date, that's inclusive of January, the fund was down 5.43%. Heck of a lot better than it looked just a few months ago, or actually 1 month ago. March was a very tough month. So you can see we're clawing our way back. Our policy index was down 8.44, and our composite benchmark was down 6.68. So just to refresh everybody's memory what the difference of the two benchmarks are, the asset allocation policy index is the policy or is the allocation that is connotated in the investment policy statement that the board has enacted. And the composite benchmark is the current allocation of the fund passively invested. So if the fund was 100% passive versus some active management, that's the way the return the fund would have. So that's the difference between the two benchmarks. We like to look at that, pretty regularly. We like to monitor that. Moving on, if we could just look at large cap growth. So one of the things that the fund did proactively, 2 months ago, we started adding money to large cap growth. We saw the opportunity there. And we've thus far added, I believe, $7.5 million, $3 million in March and $4.5 million in April. You can see that fund is up 14.26% just in 1 month. So that's actually very timely and, obviously beneficial to the fund. Moving down, large cap value, a little less than large cap growth, is up 11.2 cumulatively. So there's 11.4 from Cook and Bieler and just under 11 from your large cap value index fund. Mid cap is basically removed from the portfolio as of right now. Small cap, we have a small portion of money in small cap with Fuller and Thaler. They're a fairly new manager that we hired. We want to give them the opportunity to run, even though their asset class is out of favor. We shrunk them from $10 million down to $5 million about 6 months ago. So proactively, that was a good move, obviously, because small cap stocks are underperforming the larger cap names. Moving on to the next page, page 7 of 21, shows international equities. International has underperformed domestically. So we like domestic stocks over international stocks. However, our active international manager, WCM, has done a great job of outperforming both on the upside and the downside. And this has been, since we hired WCM, we hired WCM about 3.5 years ago, and they've consistently outperformed. And they continue to do so. You can see for the 1 month, they're up 9.01 versus 6.46. And then even on the downside, both 3 month and year to date, they're down 9.7 versus 17.84. So they're very, very good at picking stocks and, you know, adding active share to their portfolio. Then we have two passive benchmarks, Equity Blend Index and iShares Europe. You can see they're up 10.22 for the month and 1.07. Respectively. Moving on, Dolan McNeary is our core bond manager. Had a nice return for the month of 4.36, still trailing their benchmark for the 3 months and year to date. Then we have some cash. International fixed income, it's gotten beaten up a bit. We're starting to see international bonds, namely emerging market bonds, come into favor now. So we think this is a good opportunity for these things to make some money. Moving forward, coming into next year. So we still like having that allocation. Moving on to alternatives, the majority of these alternatives are static, waiting for valuations to catch up, because these things are priced. Some of them are priced quarterly, semi-annually, or even annually. So we hold those as placeholders. We do know some of the funds are up significantly, though, during this time. And then we have our cash. Scrolling on to page 9, this just shows you the managers and their style. So just a breakdown of, you know, where we look at, you know, asset classes, where they're benchmarked, what their asset class types are. We won't spend a lot of time there. Page 10 is a nice chart. It just shows your current allocation versus your policy benchmark. Obviously, we adhere to the policy because that's what we need to do. We do deviate and drift from policy on occasion when certain asset classes are in favor. Obviously, we talked to the board about that. But as you can see, we're pretty much right in line with the policy benchmark all the way down. So there's no major deviation there or anything notable to speak of on page 10 or 11.
Hey, Derek?
Yes.
Tom Kamen here. Quick question. I know I emailed you during the week too about our MSCI benchmark type holdings.
Yes.
Are you going to comment about the government's position on that, or is that something that you're not concerned about?
Do you want to elaborate on your question, Tom? I'm not really sure what you're asking.
Well, federal pensions are backing away from those benchmarks because of certain China politics, and also if money's not flowing in that direction from the U.S., is that and affect the returns? That's my question.
Okay, I think I understand what your question is. So divestitures from any benchmarks, or I don't know if you're speaking of benchmarks specific, Tom, or asset classes in general. As far as international equities, they are underperforming. We think they will continue to underperform moving forward. We like domestic stocks over international stocks. With the exception of emerging markets, they might rally a bit. But to divest due to a political reason is something that the board would have to take.
No, it's not political. It's that I think it was like $500 billion the government pulled back from going into those funds because of, you know, political reasons. But it's actual money not flowing into the funds. And, you know, even in with China now, they're talking about their accounting ways that the, you know, if they're going to want to stay on certain exchanges, they're going to have to change the accounting way. So there's a lot of pressure on China stock right now. I mean, the stock is down. So I'm just saying that may be something we should have on our radar.
Well, we don't have any exposure to MSCI emerging markets, I think is the index that you're speaking of, Tom. We're talking about the IFA, which is developed countries. So
right.
All international exposure is Europe and developed as of right now. And the majority, the majority of the money is with an active manager who is, you know, have done a great job. You know, dodging any, you know, or not dodging all the falling knives. So I don't know that there's anything proactively that we need to do. I mean, we could, if you want to make a motion to reduce our exposure, we can, you know, obviously, you know, we'll listen if that's something that you want to talk about. But we have no exposure currently to emerging markets.
For now, I just wanted to bring it up and get on the radar. That's all. I'll leave it to you.
Okay. Moving on, so just page 12 of 21, I won't spend a lot of time here. This just shows the evolution of the fund over the last year, the changes in allocation, some of the tactical moves we've made. And then page 13 of 21, it just shows a bar chart of, you know, inflows, outflows, year-to-date, investment earnings, et cetera, et cetera. I won't spend a lot of time there. And then just some current allocation breakdowns on page 15 and 14 and 15. I won't spend time there either. It just shows you versus your policy or your target allocation. You can see we're pretty much right in line with that. So I won't spend any more time there unless someone has any questions. Okay, then moving on, we'll just talk about the markets briefly because there is a lot happening. The other slideshow that Leanna sent out, I'm working off paper, so bear with me. It's called Surf Talk. Were you folks able to get the highlighted version? I try to highlight some of the pieces on here. I'm not sure when I printed it didn't print, but do you guys see on page one a highlighted?
Yeah, I think it's highlighted.
It's highlighted.
Okay,
you can
great.
See it.
Great. So I just wanted to call, you know, obviously there's a lot here and I don't want to spend a lot of time going over things. But basically what I did is I took some time to just highlight points that I thought were key. And one thing I need to kind of point out is that, you know, bear markets are very, very fast and violent, as we can see. You know, this bear market was probably the fastest on record in the number of days it took to reduce the market by 20%. Just to remind everybody, a bear market's a 20% reduction. It was as fast and as violent as it could be. So those things happen quickly, but bull markets tend to last for years. So that's good news. What that tells us is it gives us opportunities to buy stocks as the markets recover and as bright spots present themselves. So it's good to be patient. We started the methodical purchase of large cap growth stocks just to right size the portfolio because we were underweight. Not because we were making any active bets. We just thought that growth stocks were going to outperform, and they have, namely a few select sectors. One of the things that we look at now, obviously, the market's keeping a close eye on what's going on with COVID, as are everybody, for all the obvious reasons. You can see the other day, it was 2 days ago, the market had a 900-point positive day because there were two biotech companies that came out that said they had either vaccine or antibody for COVID. And those two stocks were up, you know, 130, 140% intraday. So clearly the market is desperately in hopes of some sort of positive news. So on that line, not saying that we're going to flip a switch and this is all going to go away, but the two charts on the right of page two show COVID tracking. You can see both the number of new tests are increasing, so that means more people are getting tested, which is good, and the percentage of positive tests are still declining. So that's obviously a very good sign. We hope that continues for all the obvious reasons. And then also hospitalization is down as well as new cases. So those are two very important things. Testing is up drastically and cases are still going down. So I think the market is looking at this and digesting this. And I think a lot of the positive returns we've seen in the stocks are in the expectation that this happens. Now, mind you, if we have any...
Hey.
I'm sorry, was that me? I thought a little feedback there. I didn't know if someone was asking a question. If we have any uncertainty there or any setbacks now that things are starting to open around the country, you know, if we see spikes in cases happening, obviously that will be very detrimental to the economy and to the stock market. So that's something we are looking for and being very mindful of. Page 3 just shows you kind of from a valuation standpoint, stocks currently are pretty expensive. So we're not overly bullish on stocks at this point. You look at just forward price to earnings multiples, we're at 20.3, maybe even a little bit higher now. And this is just because the expectations of, you know, a lot of these companies are not giving guidance on forecasts for their future. Next quarter, we don't know what these stocks are going to earn. We don't know where it's going to go. So a lot of this uncertainty is giving the market some trepidation. We're kind of in a sideways moving market, volatile as it may be. We're kind of sideways moving, which is depicted on page 4. This chart is a few days old. On the S&P, that top chart, we're right up at that over that 2955 band. So a lot of these technical charts look at support and resistance. So what we look at when we're looking at stocks is where is their support? At what price level on the S&P is there support for the market to kind of bottom? And then what are important resistance levels, meaning where does the market have a ceiling? And if it does break through that ceiling, where's the next ceiling? Where's the market going to go from there? So we've been flirting with that 2955. The S&P broke through it the other day on Monday. As I mentioned, closed above it and then fell yesterday. So today's going to be a positive day. We'll see where it goes. But we're hoping that this thing breaks through that upper resistance level. And then as you can see, the level above that is 3136. So there's a nice little opportunity set there if the market does successfully close higher. But we're watching it closely. Moving on to page 5. I won't spend a lot of time on the rest of these slides, but this slide is important. Just looking at from a short-term standpoint, pretty much every bear market that we've had in modern day has what they call a retest of the low or a double bottom. As you can see, this is depicted here visually on all of these charts. So we're not saying that the past is going to predict the future, but we would not be surprised if we see some sort of reprieve from where we are. That would put valuations back to a more normalized place. Some of these declines could be as little as 5%. Some of them closer to, 15, 17%. But what we do know is that that's a healthy retest of a low. And typically what happens from there is it's up and away. So, it's not good for our stomach to see that happen. It's the pain factor is severe, but we look at that as an opportunity to buy more stocks. So we'll be patient. We still have cash on the sidelines. We're still paying benefits from our cash. So that's a good thing. The fund is in a good position to pay benefits and also have some dry powder on the sidelines to take advantage of any pullbacks. So we think we're in a bottoming process. We think we're kind of base building, if you will. And moving forward, we see some, hopefully, opportunity to buy some stocks at a cheaper price than where we are today. With that said, I don't have any other comments. Does anybody have any questions, comments, concerns? No? Well, then we are finished with our presentation. If anybody has questions.
Derek.
Yes.
Just the city annual ARC payment that was forwarded. Has all that money been invested to date?
No, Jerry. We've, as we've mentioned in the past, what we've been doing is adding some of that money methodically every month to.
Okay, all right, I understand. Yep.
Right.
But I don't know how much of it was invested prior to the Corona crisis.
No, none of it was invested prior to the Corona crisis. So that was actually a blessing in disguise. So. Yep.
If things go right, you're totally by accident.
Exactly. So we're all set here on our side, unless anybody has any other questions.
No questions.
Great, thank you.
Enjoy. Derek, this is Leanna. Did you want to touch on what I'll be emailing them after this meeting?
Thank you for reminding me. Yes, Leanna. So we've been contacted by Fairview Capital. Just to remind the trustees who Fairview Capital was, they presented to the board, I don't have the date, but it was several months ago. I think it was last year. They're a venture capital firm based in Connecticut, minority and women owned firm. They presented when Alkeon presented their Venture Capital Innovations Fund. To remind the board, the board voted to hire Fairview for an emerging manager's mandate for $5 million. Fairview Capital, after their meeting, had told us that it's going to take some time to ramp up and generate this fund or create this fund for the city of New Haven. They reached out to me about a month ago and mentioned that obviously during the COVID crisis, this has obviously slowed their prospects of creating this fund, and they were asking to present to the board their flagship fund. It's their traditional venture capital fund 5. They've had other vintages, 4, 3, 2, 1 that were very, very successful. They had great returns. It's a fund of funds. They have up to a 20% co-investment, but they feel the opportunity set would be greater for you, for your fund in their flagship fund. So they'd asked us and Leanna to add them to June's agenda if they could make a presentation to you. Obviously I told them the fund that we agreed to fund is not the fund that they're looking to present. So we have to have a new presentation. Obviously they have a very, very good track record. They're a local firm here in West Hartford, Connecticut. So obviously we'd like to add them to the agenda if that's okay with the trustees via this.
Derek, I have a quick question.
Yes.
We had voted them to use them for $5 million, and they came back and said that they could only do $10 million. Is that correct?
No, that was a different firm.
Right.
That was a firm out of Stanford.
Yeah, that was Materin.
Yeah, we actually voted to give Fairview Capital money, but as I understand it, once COVID hit, it slowed down raising funds for this fund. But I think it still aligns with what we were attempting to do, hiring a minority and women-owned firm.
Yeah, especially with good returns.
And they have really good track record.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to make sure it wasn't that firm that rejected us. Okay.
No.
All right. So we'll put them on the agenda to be presented the next month.
Okay.
I'm also going to email after this meeting to all the trustees. Derek sent me from Fairview Capital so that you guys have time to look it over from now until then.
Derek, what is that strategy once again?
It's a venture capital fund. It's a fund of funds, Tom, and they have upwards of a 20% of the fund could be a co-investment fund. So it's basically venture capital.
And what's the difference?
Is there a specific part of the market that they're in?
Well, I'll let them tell the story, Tom, because every venture capital fund has different strategies and different funds. And I'm not sure what this vintage is going to be geared towards, but they've had some success.
Okay.
Basically it's the goal of the fund is to find unique private companies, invest in them, and you know, the return characteristics typically happen when these companies go public, and they've had a good track record of being invested in funds or in companies that go public and generate high rates of return for the investor. So,
all right, good, thank you.
Leanna, this is Carolyn, so you'll post that information on the website for the next meeting for June.
Yeah, I wasn't going to post, this is Leanna, I wasn't going to post it for today because they're going to be presenting it in June. So, but I wanted to just give it to the trustees so they have time to look it over. That's why I didn't include it today.
Carolyn, I'll be sending a signed contract.
No, Jerry, I looked at it. I have to change the dates on it.
Okay, so I'd like to send me an updated one.
Yes, I'm going to do that.
I'm going to sign it so I get it. All right, I think has all business been conducted on the agenda? And if so, what is the trustees?
Make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Trustee Kam has made a motion to adjourn.
I'll second it.
Kathy Graves, is Trustee Graves to second it? Trustee Zangari?
Yes.
You approve? Trustee Mayor Elliker?
He has left the meeting.
Okay. Trustee Kama? Trustee Sagnella? Yes. Have a good time. Thank you very much.
Everyone stay safe.
I apologize for the technical problem at the beginning of the meeting.
I think you went pretty smooth, Jerry. Good job for everybody.
Take care. All right.